Hey, what you doing there? What? Oh, you want to test the level? Oh, all right. Why? Is it different? Sounds all right. All right. Okay, cool. That sounds good. Yeah, it's not too heavy. I can talk over the bed, the musical bed, if you will. All right, Reg, are you ready to go? Good. Let's do this thing then. I'll give you the three S's. I'll give you the countdown. I'll give you a podcast, and you hit that music now that you have right the right level there, right? Okay, cool. Put it in the books. Episode 436. 436. And star, smile strong, and 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. Hold on. Can you make that? Actually, can we go a little louder on that? That's good. I like that a little better. All right. Okay, Reg, here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. Whoa. That was a little hot. Okay, a little quick. Here we go again. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget, get out there and spread the word about your favorite podcast. So tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to podcasts that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs, too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. And if you like what you hear, whether you've been around for a long time or just recently, you go to WGNRadio.com. You go to the podcast section, you hit the prompt for this podcast, and you will find previous podcasts there. It's always good to find out where we've been so you know where we're going. So scroll down, and load more and load more. There's podcasts there on a variety of fun, interesting, quirky, and always engaging topics. It's a great way to spend an hour, I think. Whether you've never heard them before, or whether you've heard them before and you want to hear them again. We've done a lot of these. This is number 436. Wow, 436. Whom dog is? Well, it's interesting that I say that phrase, doggies. People might know that was a catchphrase from the classic TV show Beverly Hillbillies, said by Jed Clampett, played by Buddy Ebsen, who also went on to later fame as a 70s private eye called Barnaby Jones. And a little known, but it used to be little known. About 35, 40 years ago, it was a little known fact. Now it seems to be more well-known, but you still might not have come across this little tidbit. Did you know, and maybe you did, but maybe some of you didn't, and that's why this podcast is here, to inform, to give you that kind of information that you can't find anywhere else. I guarantee you there's not too many podcasts on today that will be giving you Buddy Ebsen trivia. I think I can almost guarantee that. I don't think there's many people doing podcasts today who know who Buddy Ebsen is, to be honest with you. But he certainly had a great career. His fame came later in his career, as I said, the Beverly Hillbillies, which was on in the 60s and went into the early 70s, was one of, if not the most popular television shows on television for many years. Number one, your basic fish out of water concept, but it certainly worked well, no question. But as I said, Buddy Ebsen played the patriarch of the Clampett family, Jed, who struck gold, Texas Tea. And the first thing you know, old Jed's a millionaire. The kinfolk said, Jed, move away from there. Said California is the place you ought to be. So, of course, he and Granny and Ellie Mae and Jethro loaded up the truck and they moved to Beverly Hills, that is. Swimming pools, movie stars. The Beverly Hillbillies. The song even became a hit. The theme song by the classic country and western and bluegrass band, Flat and Scruggs. Lester Flat and Earl Scruggs. Classic song, The Ballad of Jed Clampett. The funny thing is, I am not going to talk about Jed Clampett. I'm not going to talk about, this is not about Buddy Ebsen. This podcast today has nothing to do with Buddy Ebsen, has nothing to do with the Beverly Hillbillies. And yet, what, the first 6 minutes or so has been a Buddy Ebsen-a-thon, if you will. And I still haven't given you a little nugget of trivia. Yeah, so Buddy Ebsen, Jed Clampett, later Barnaby Jones. Did you know that Buddy Ebsen, who was a well-known song and dance man and was in many films throughout the 40s and 50s, and then, as I said, in the 60s, he struck gold with this TV show. He wasn't a huge star, but he was in a lot of movies. He had a lanky build, and he was a dancer. And ironically, he winds up being the star of this TV sitcom, where every so often he would do some dancing. He snuck in some dancing, in unlikely dancing, in the role of Jed Clampett. But did you know that Buddy Ebsen was not just up for the role? Buddy Ebsen had the role. This is how much of a prominent song and dance man he was early in his career. He had the role of the Tin Man in The Wizard of Oz. He was the original Tin Man. Now, Jack Haley wound up playing the Tin Man, and he is forever immortalized as part of that classic film, with Ray Bolger as the Scarecrow and Burt Lahr as the Cowardly Lion and Jack Haley as Tin Man, and of course Judy Garland as Dorothy. Hello, Dorothy. That's the way. Didn't you love in the Wizard of Oz how most of the of her main little companions on the Yellow Brick Road, they all had New York, thick New York accents. Didn't you love that? East Coast accents. They were supposed to be from Kansas, right? Remember that? I mean, that's where those characters all started from. And yet, Ray Bolger and Jack Haley, especially, If I Only Had a Heart. A heart? And even Burt Lahr, however he's, even he had, and Ray Bolger, hello, Dorothy, Ray Bolger, Dorothy, it was, but back then there wasn't that kind of a scrutiny of things, but yeah, so Buddy Ebsen was the original Tin Man, and actually began to film the role. He was the Tin Man. But if you remember, in that film, Jack Haley, If I Only Had a Heart, hot. I love that. You know, he had this silver makeup on, right? He had the Tin Man outfit, but his face and hands had this silver makeup, if you remember. Now, once again, this is in the late 30s when this film is made. And so, you know, the technology of makeup and so many things is not as advanced and is not as, you know, perhaps user-friendly or health-friendly, if you will, as today's are. Back then, there were very few health considerations on anything. And there's a long-standing joke. I'm not the first one to make it, obviously. But there were so few restrictions on things. When I think of how so many products today are recalled or, you know, they go through so much testing. And I think about some of the things that I grew up with that were, in retrospect, so unsafe for a small child to use. And yet we made it through. But regardless, that's a whole other topic. So apparently what happened was during the early filming of The Wizard of Oz with Buddy Ebsen as the Tin Man, this makeup that had to go on his face and hands, the silver makeup, I don't know what it was made of. You can look this up, and I'm sure they'll give you on the internet, and they'll get into the weeds in terms of details. But just as an overview, this makeup, whatever it was made of, it either Buddy Ebsen was allergic to it, or he had a reaction to it because it was so thick as to what it was made of that his pores couldn't breathe in his skin. And so it was so bad that he had to drop out of the part. Now, I'm not sure. Once again, I think you can go on Google and find this out. This is all top of the head information to me, so I'm sorry I don't have all the specific details, but I don't know if they used the same makeup then for Jack Haley and he didn't have a reaction to it, or he wasn't allergic to it, or perhaps after they did this with Buddy Ebsen, they realized maybe we need to change the consistency of this makeup. I don't know. But one way or the other, Buddy Ebsen had to drop out of the role of the Tin Man because of his adverse reaction to the makeup for the Tin Man. And you know, I mean, in the grand scheme, I'm sure Buddy Ebsen says, okay, well, things worked out all right. You know, this was in 1939. It wasn't until 30 years later that his career took off and he wound up getting amazing fame and fortune. There are no guarantees in the business of show. And but there he was. One, he would have been immortalized as part of this film that will live on forever. It already has. It came out in 1939. You know, it's already been around for almost, you know, 90 years now. I mean, it's not, you know, we're close to it, but we're still, you know. And he would have been immortalized forever. He still will be remembered for, you know, the Beverly Hillbillies and Barnaby Jones, but certainly not as much. The Wizard of Oz will go on. That is a classic. It will be always played. And 300 years from now, I think, if there's still some kind of entertainment, I can only imagine how we'll be getting entertainment in 200 or 300 years. But I would imagine that The Wizard of Oz will still be around in some way. I wonder now when I think about this, and once again, I had no intention of talking about the Buddy Ebsen story. And there's some people might be saying, who the hell is Buddy Ebsen? Well, maybe this is a little, you know, kickoff spot for you to go do a little Google search on Buddy Ebsen. Hopefully I've intrigued you, at least with the Wizard of Oz story. But it would be interesting. I don't know. I'd have to look on there or look up and see and, you know, do some research on interviews. I would have loved to have asked Buddy Ebsen after he achieved his Beverly Hillbillies fame, so at least he realized success in the business, okay? Because it's certainly, you know, before Beverly Hillbillies, I'm sure that Buddy Ebsen was going through a lot of sour grapes, saying, you know, for years, this Wizard of Oz is this classic film almost right away when it's released, and Buddy Ebsen is sitting there going, I had the role. That was me. I would have been immortalized. And here I am, struggling to get any kind of notoriety, and I had it, and this stupid makeup prevented me from being immortal. And I'm sure that had to weigh on Buddy for quite a few decades until, once again, he strikes gold. And the irony is that the major, aside from Judy Garland, you know, the other three, Ray Bolger and Jack Haley and Burt Lahr, while they certainly had careers after The Wizard of Oz, that appearance, that is how they are remembered and defined. By that film. And they went on and they had careers and they did things, but they never, ever came close to achieving the success and notoriety that they got from The Wizard of Oz. So the interesting question that I would have liked to have asked Buddy Ebsen is, okay, Buddy, now that you know what happened, you had this unfortunate situation with the Wizard of Oz, which made you drop out of this film that became an instant classic and would have given you immortality. But then 30 years later, it could be argued that you became a bigger star in terms of money and fame and notoriety than Jack Haley did, because Jack Haley really didn't do anything to even come close to matching the fame and success he had from Wizard of Oz. And meanwhile, while it took Buddy Ebsen another 30 years to, you know, 25 to 30 years to get his break, he was on the number one show on television that ran for several years. So he was well known. He certainly had a good bank account. And then when the Beverly Hillbillies ends, about 5, 6, 7, 8 years later, he gets another hit TV show when he's in his 60s and 70s. So I guess I'm sure someone asked it, you know, would you have rather been the Tin Man and never had Jed Clampett and Barnaby Jones, or would you have rather had Jed Clampett and Barnaby Jones? Would you rather have it the way it happened? Or would you say, yeah, but you know, wow, I could have been the Tin Man. Would you have traded Jed and Barnaby for the Tin Man? Is, I guess, the main question. I don't know. It's interesting, interesting way. Interesting question. And from the standpoint of the perspective of one would give you decades of, and like I said, and I assume that The Wizard of Oz is going to be around for centuries, would give you a lasting immortality. While the Beverly Hillbillies and Barnaby Jones certainly gave him some immediate fame and fortune, but how long those shows will be remembered for decades or even centuries to come is questionable. I think The Wizard of Oz will last longer than Beverly Hillbillies and Barnaby Jones, just as I said before. I bet you there's people in their 30s and 40s who've never even heard of Barnaby Jones or Beverly Hillbillies, but they have heard of Wizard of Oz. So, I don't know. It would be an interesting question. The reason I don't... all I said was, doggies. And that sparked a 20-minute Buddy Ebsen conversation. Wow. And the only reason that I... that there's even a connection is because the Andy Griffith Show, watch this connection, folks. The Andy Griffith Show and the Beverly Hillbillies and Barnaby Jones were all on CBS. Because I'm really going to talk about Andy Griffith, but not even really Andy Griffith. I'm going to talk about something connected to Andy Griffith. That's why I love this podcast. I hope it's why you do too. Who knows where our conversation is going to go, but hopefully you stick around. It's always interesting as we traverse these roads less traveled to finally define the main topic. That one even shocked me, folks. I got to tell you. If I didn't say doggies, I don't know why I even said it, but all it takes is a doggie, and I can give you 20 minutes on Buddy Ebsen. Okay. Well, anyway, if there's any connection between Buddy Ebsen and Andy Griffith, it's, I guess they were both on CBS, all right? Oh, I should mention a really good Buddy Ebsen episode of The Twilight Zone as well, called The Prime Mover, if you ever see that one. Buddy Ebsen is on The Twilight Zone in a really cool episode. Way too much information. I have way too much information on the top of my head. No notes here, folks. No notes. Top of my head about Buddy Ebsen. Everything you wanted to know about Buddy Ebsen, right there. Okay. Here's what I really want to talk about. It's Andy Griffith connected, but it's not even that, really. It is and it isn't. I don't know how I got on such a Buddy Ebsen jag, but we will now divert back to our main road here. You may know, once again, if you're under a certain age, you may not know. You may know that there was a very popular show in the mid-80s into the mid-90s called Matlock. And the reruns are still on some stations. Now, I know younger people, for the most part, watch streaming. They don't really watch network television anymore. But I'm sure Matlock reruns are on the stream somewhere, no question. But certainly on some of the cable stations, there are Matlock reruns. And basically, Matlock was a folksy version of Perry Mason, the popular show from the 50s and 60s with Raymond Burr. One of the original and certainly probably the most famous courtroom drama shows in television history. Now, you could make an argument that L.A. Law, that was out in the 80s, certainly falls in that category too. But Perry Mason was the first. And I don't know if you saw it, but there was a really good remake. I believe it was on HBO. Of Perry Mason, which was a complete new reimagination of the character and set in a whole different time that I really liked. It only lasted for two seasons. I think Robert Downey Jr. actually produced that. Should have stayed on longer. It was a good show. There was a classic courtroom drama where there is some kind of a crime. Many times it was a murder, if not some other kind of serious crime. And the lawyer has to, his client is, he's always a defense lawyer. Perry Mason was a defense lawyer. So was Ben Matlock, played by Andy Griffith. Anything with Andy Griffith has to be folksy, right? I mean, that's the core of Andy Griffith. Folksy. Even his great role in the film, A Face in the Crowd, he's folksy. That's Andy. He plays an amazing role in Face of the Crowd. If you've never seen that film, it's really an Andy Griffith, a side of Andy Griffith that you will recognize, and then there's a dark side that you will not. So I really would recommend, if you like Andy Griffith, if you know who he is, see the film A Face in the Crowd. But anything Andy Griffith does always is folksy. That's the essence of Andy Griffith. While he's a defense attorney who's defending a client who looks like he or she is guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, and then of course either Perry Mason and then, as I said, Ben Matlock always find a way to get to the real heart of the crime. And it's obvious it's never their client. And then they always expose the real guilty party most of the time in the courtroom. It was a classic format. Perry Mason reruns are still on several stations. Perry Mason is still on several times a day on many stations if you have satellite or cable. So it was a classic format. It was an interesting format, and so Perry Mason was a hugely successful show for many, many years. And so Andy Griffith was plopped into an updated version, as I said, but a little less folksy. Raymond Burr was always much more serious. Hello, Della. Yes. With Paul Drake. Hello, Paul. He was much more serious. At the end of the show, sometimes Perry Mason would smile at Della. We never really knew if anything was going on between Della and Perry. But of course, Matlock was folksy. It was Andy Griffith. It was basically a version of the same kind of Andy Griffith kind of character as this Southern lawyer. And he always wore this white suit, and he always was a little disheveled, you know. He wasn't slick. He was more homespun and, oh, Ben, but he never lost a case. And there was a charm and an appeal to it. And many times it did feel like it was Andy Griffith if Andy Taylor left Mayberry, went to law school, in his midlife crisis, and then became a lawyer. I mean, he almost played Andy Taylor as Ben Matlock. And toward at the end of the show, he even brought back some of his old co-stars from the Andy Griffith show. Most notably, Don Knotts, and Don Knotts basically played a version of Barney Fife. They almost did the same kind of skits, some of the same skits toward the end. But hey, if it worked once, it would work again, and we love nostalgia. So Matlock became this popular show in the mid-80s and ran for 10 years. I think it ran for about 8 years on NBC, and then ABC picked it up for a couple of years after that. But it was a very popular show. It gave Andy Griffith an amazing career renaissance late in his life. And it's still on today. It's much like Murder, She Wrote. It was aimed at an older crowd who remembered Andy Griffith, who remembered Perry Mason. It was a tried and true format. Now an updated version, but with a tried and true popular actor, and who is kind of reprising a popular character of his past. So it's usually associated with, it's like, oh, it's an older person. Even in the 80s, it was viewed as an older person's show. And now if anybody wants to make fun of anybody in their 70s or 80s or older, they say, oh, they always watch Matlock. But there's worse things to do. I have to be honest, as much as I liked, I love Andy Griffith and I love Andy Taylor, I didn't watch Matlock in the 80s and 90s. I didn't. Because I sort of saw through, I was like, he's just playing Andy Griffith here. And, you know, I was in my 20s and 30s at the time, and so it's like, hey, you know, I even probably viewed it subliminally as an older person show, even though I love all the old shows. But I've never watched Matlock with any kind of regularity. So in today's world, over the last 15 or 20 years, CBS Network has found great success in airing programming aimed at an older audience. Everybody's also always chasing the younger audience because that's who is most prized by advertisers. And so everybody's looking for the next cool show with the next cool cast. Everybody's looking for the next Friends or the next whatever. You know, the cool shows, the hip shows. And the problem with that is that those shows usually burn hot and fast and burn out because trends tend to not last. They get red hot and they fade away. And the next fad comes in. Now, if you're a network, you can make a lot of money very quickly if you get a show that is the hot show. But a lot of times, if it's so of the moment and it's so trendy, it doesn't have the legs. And so, as I said, it burns hot and then it burns out and it goes away fast. You might make a quick buck, but you won't make the long buck. So it depends if you want to be the tortoise or the hare. So while ABC and NBC were all looking to appeal to the younger generation because they're the ones who are prized by advertisers because they're the ones with the disposable income and they're the ones who spend money, CBS wisely said, you know, nobody's catering to an older generation who is, A, used to watching network television, which is a key because most younger people today don't even know what network television is. They're all watching streaming services. They've all cut the cord and they don't have an antenna. So even before streaming services became popular, though, with the other two networks kind of trying to be hip and cool, CBS struck out on a very smart, strategic programming decision, which is to create programs that were aimed at an older demographic. Now, they might not be spending as much money from an advertising standpoint, but they're watching. And you know what? They have some disposable income. They might not throw it around as much, but you know, those people have all their 401ks and their savings. The young people are making it and spending it, no question. But the older generation has some money in the coffers. It might be not be as easy to get it out of them as it is the young people, but they spend it when they like something. And so CBS showed advertisers and showed the television industry that there is money to be made. There is revenue from ads and there is popularity to be made by making programs that might not be hip or cool, might not be the rage that everybody's talking about, but that get consistent, high, and long-term ratings. And so, I think beginning pretty much with now the disgraced head of CBS for many years, Les Moonves, who had to resign due to a sexual harassment scandal a few years ago. But he's the one that really devised this. If he didn't devise it, he certainly elevated it, of programming aimed at older viewers. So that's where you got these shows like, Murder, She Wrote, and even, you know, CSI and some of these other kind of shows. Early days, he had shows with well-known stars, as I said, in new shows that we liked. So there was a version of Bill Cosby. Now, he's been disgraced, but there was a version of Bill Cosby on CBS in the 90s and early 2000s. And Ted Danson did a show called Becker and many others that starred actors and actresses who had success on previous shows, and he brought them back, and they had good runs and successful runs. And so CBS got the reputation of being an old person's network because they did shows that appealed to an older audience that starred older people. Now, they weren't the only ones. I mean, Golden Girls was on NBC. They weren't the only ones, but those kind of shows seem to dominate the CBS schedule more than other ones. But CBS wound up being the number one network because of that strategy. The irony was that while there were these red hot shows, you know, like I said, like Friends and things like that, that were all hip and cool. Meanwhile, CBS had a very large and consistent viewing ratings, ad revenues, and was a number one network by tailoring its programming to an older demographic. Wasn't hip, wasn't cool, more traditional storytelling, and it turned out to be a very excellent strategy, which in many cases CBS still subscribes to today. Which brings us to what I really want to talk about today. So, we are certainly now in an era of sequels, prequels, and reboots. The show business industry, all over all genres, whether it's movies, television, theater, whatever it may be, even podcasts, at every category of entertainment, there is a need, because there's so many outlets now, there's always been this need, but it's even greater today because of so many formats. There is a need for familiarity. As I said, this was a winning strategy for CBS to take older established stars who you liked, Ted Danson from Cheers, Bill Cosby from The Cosby Show, Angela Lansbury, well-known in films, theater, plop them on television. People say, oh, I owe Andy Griffith. This was on NBC. I like Andy Griffith. I loved Andy Griffith. Oh, here he is on a new show. Let me watch it. And today, if you look at the most popular theatrical shows, stage shows, whether they're musicals or they're all based on either old TV shows or old movies made into musicals. The stakes are so high, the prices are so high, that there needs to be a familiarity to get an immediate audience, because you don't have time to develop a show anymore. If a show doesn't hit now, it's gone. Now, some might get another life on streaming services somewhere down the road. That has happened, but the window for success is much smaller now because there is so much content. And so everybody in every aspect of entertainment is looking to rely on either older shows to give them a reboot, or take an older show and get a new spin on it, whether it's a prequel to that show. So, I mean, if you look around, we've got reboots of the FBI. That was an old show from the 60s. And there's a Frasier reboot, right? And there's a show based on the movie Fargo, even though it's not based on the film itself, but the vibe of it. There's hundreds of shows that are reboots, prequels. There's a prequel on of Lord of the Rings right now somewhere. I mean, it's everywhere. There are some original shows, certainly, no question. But there are a lot of prequels and sequels and reboots, and some have been successful and some haven't. And there's always this iffy, you know, you look at, you say, okay, well, let's go mining, the past to see if we can make something cool for the present. And in many instances, this works because, depending on it, you get a nostalgia factor for maybe at least one generation. There was a reboot a few years ago, Full House. So anybody in their 20s and 30s who were little kids watched the Olsen twins with John Stamos, they think that's the greatest show on earth. So when there's a reboot, oh my gosh, it's like big news. The show wasn't that good, from what I understand. I was never a big Full House fan. I didn't care. I was too old for that. But somebody 20 or 30 years younger than me would say, oh, I grew up with that. Just like I say I grew up with some other shows. You know, so our nostalgia is always tied to our early years. So that's why many shows, many networks are looking to see what's been popular for the last 20 or 30 or 40 years ago. If you can get a show, if you can get something that was 40 years ago, you might even be able to tap into to two generations and get people in their 50s and 60s and 70s as well as in their 30s and 40s. That's the mother load. But sadly, that's where things are. There are not a lot of original ideas today. And it's unfortunate. Because when you look back at the 40s and 50s and 60s, it was such a fertile time. And 70s too. It was such a fertile time. And now we just seem to say, you know, it's so much dollars and cents. And it always was a money business. It's show business. Don't get me wrong. But there was a lot more originality. Today, the stakes are higher. And so everybody wants something that's been a proven success. It's a better bet. If you're looking to keep your job, if you're a network executive, aren't you better off, Talling, we're going to have a reboot of Frasier, than talking about some new show with some new person who's never been tested, and you say, well, we hope it's a hit. Because that's lightning in a bottle. Now, many times these reboots, they either rely on the old formula with all the old cast members, which sometimes works, but many times doesn't, because the show just doesn't have that same magic that it did originally. Even if you have the same people, there was a freshness to it that it's nobody's fault, but these people can't recreate that first impression anymore. You know them. They're iconic. So you see one or two episodes of a reboot with the original cast, and you go, oh, it's nice to see that. Oh, it's nice to see them. But it's really not hitting on the same cylinders as the original was. Or you see them try something completely different. And then people go, well, that's not the show that I remember. That's not the character that I remember. I don't like that. And so that goes away too. And television has done this. This is nothing new now. It's just that it's done more prevalently than it used to be. And so even these so-called better odds, these shows with better odds of success, sometimes they're just as unsuccessful as the untested stars and the untested shows and the untested concepts. So, and we've seen some great, I mean, you've seen, look at the, in past, Big Bang Theory, for instance, very popular show on CBS for like 13 years. And then it spawns another 4 or 5 year successful show, Young Sheldon. And now that has spawned another. The Young Sheldon show has spawned a new spinoff, which will be on in a couple of weeks on CBS with two of the characters from Young Sheldon. So just like All in the Family in the 70s, which was responsible for several successful spinoffs. All in the Family has quite a tree of successful shows for CBS and Norman Lear. All in the Family premiered in 1971. It spawned a spinoff of Maude. Maude was originally Edith Bunker's cousin. All in the Family spawned the Jeffersons. The Jeffersons, George and Louise and Lionel, were the Bunkers' neighbors. They got their own show. Maude got their own show. Then Good Times was a spinoff from Maude, and Maude was a spinoff from All in the Family. Florida was Maude's maid. And even though it was an odd spinoff in that it was the same character, Florida, but it was different in that they moved the show to a different location. Her husband's name was different. It was a completely different story, but the character was strong enough that they were able to make that transition. But as I said, there's one show that spawned several huge, huge hits. And so, like I said, right now, Big Bang, this is the third out of the Big Bang show, two shows out of that, and three total. So there is something said for familiar characters, popular characters, no question. But it's still an exact science. But that's what we're seeing so much of today. We're seeing movie reboots. We're seeing prequels to shows. We're seeing sequels to previous shows and films or plays or wherever. They're mining everything that's come before to say, how do we refresh it for a new generation? And hey, as much as a music fan that I am, when I was a little kid and I heard a cover version of a song and it was on the top 40 station of the time, I didn't know that this was a song that came out 20 years before. Even a song like "Da Do Run Run," okay, right? A classic song, Phil Spector and the Wall of Sound. I really learned about that song because of Sean Cassidy in the mid-70s did a version of it. Was a hit. And then all of a sudden said, well, you know, this was a song from the 60s. Really? I wasn't even born. So there's something to be said for remakes. Don't get me wrong. But they're not the guaranteed success that those who make them think they will be. So in this world, especially on streaming services, that's where a lot of these reboots are happening. Because Netflix and Paramount Plus and all the rest, Hulu, they all need viewers. They need subscribers. So we're going to bring back this old show with the original star, and maybe we'll bring back some of their old castmates. Sometimes we won't. I mentioned the Frasier reboot that is now out now. Apparently, I haven't seen it because I don't have Paramount Plus is a streaming service, but so originally Frasier was back in Boston. He left Seattle, but I guess in this season he's going back to Seattle. And Roz is going to be on. And Bulldog is going to be on. And BB is going to be on. Some of the old castmates or people that were popular on the show, because they need that nostalgia thing. That new concept really wasn't working, I don't think, surrounded by a whole bunch of new characters. So bring back Roz, bring back BB, bring back Bulldog. David Hyde Pierce does not want to be a part of this show as Niles, which I think is probably one of the main reasons why the show has not been a huge success, because he was really a great part of that show. He won several Emmy Awards as Niles. So anyway. We love sequels. We love I don't know if we love them, but TV and movie people and even theater people love prequels, sequels, and reboots. Even Harry Potter is on stage. They had not only all the versions, but then there were offshoots, the Fantastic Beasts kind of series based on Harry Potter, and now there's Harry Potter and the Cursed Child on stage. It's everywhere. My case has been made. So here's an interesting thing. CBS, as I said before, aimed at an older crowd, announces several months ago, actually several years ago, but the writer's strike delayed it, that they were going to do a show called Matlock. And so everybody's like, well, that makes sense for CBS. They're going to do a reboot of Matlock. Okay, well, what's that going to be? Well, Andy Griffith has passed away. And it's going to star Oscar winner Kathy Bates. And they say, oh, well, that's interesting. Okay, another older, well-known, Aunt Kathy Bates is in her mid-70s. An older, well-known actress will take over the role of this well-known, successful TV show of the past. It's been 30 years since Matlock has been on the air, but there's still people who remember it and watched it. And so, and then of course we'll cast a woman in the role, so that adds a different aspect to it. But it still seems to be like it's going to be a lawyer show. Okay, so there's a female Matlock. And it's by an older actress, just like the original Matlock was with Andy Griffith. And so there's some appeal, some interest in it. Okay, how are they going to do it? But we know the formula of Matlock. We know the formula was based on Perry Mason. And so we probably know the format of this. It's going to be, this older, wise, lawyer who's going to outsmart the younger people in these different cases. And they're going to go to trial. And, of course, Matlock, now in this case, Kathy Bates, will outsmart everybody. And it'll be a nice, safe, comfortable show that seems to fit right into the CBS programming strategy of aiming programs that are not edgy, that are not controversial, that are aimed at an older demographic, that are a little more nostalgic, a little more, as I said, comfort food kind of television. And that was the impression that they were sending out about this new reboot. So there was some curiosity about it because of the name brand of Matlock and because you have a woman as the lead character. But I wouldn't say that there was a buzz about it. And there were some shrugs about it. Like, oh, okay, well, that's a typical CBS move to just take this old show from the past, recast it with a well-known older star, and it'll probably be successful in a tired old concept and format that we know. But that's the CBS way. And that was the impression. And that's the way it was even sold in all of the commercials and everything else. So, while I am not a big Matlock fan, a couple of weeks ago, they did a sneak preview of the premiere pilot episode of Matlock on a Sunday. And I think it's, the CBS official season of premieres starts in a couple of weeks on October 17th. That's when all their big shows like Ghosts and, this new spinoff from Young Sheldon and all the other shows. It seems like October 17th. The new TV season used to always start in September, but it's been pushed back because there's less episodes now. There used to be 27, 25, 23 episodes a year back in the 60s, there were 30 episodes. So the season used to start right at the end of Labor Day and go all the way till May. But now there's fewer episodes because they cost so much. So the season starts later in the year. So now it's October. So I think CBS's official date for new shows is October 17th. But to get a little jump on the competition and maybe create a little buzz, even though Matlock would start its regular episodes on a weekly basis on the 17th of October, they decided to, a couple of weeks earlier, to show the premiere. So there was really nothing on. So I said, well, let's watch this Matlock thing with Kathy Bates. I like Kathy Bates, and see what they're going to do. I had very low expectations of it, but we'll watch it and see how bad it is. And if it's bad, we'll turn away. If it's something interesting, we'll watch it through. So we put on Matlock, the new reboot with Kathy Bates, and it's just what you expect. She's got a little more edge to her because, you know, it's a different time now. And she's a woman character and she's older. So she's being a little more feisty. And she's surrounded by younger people who are skeptical of her. And she's bringing up ageism and a lot of these things. But she's a little folksy, too. They kind of blended both. She tells a story about how, you know, she's got a grandson that doesn't like her, and her daughter passed away, and she takes the bus home, and she hasn't worked in 30 years. And so, you know, this little folksy character, she's got these little, you know, little sage, little phrases of advice based on her experience, and that's kind of the way you see this going. So as I'm watching and I'm saying, well, you know, she's likable, and I see what they're doing here. They're making her a little folksy like the Matlock character, but not completely. And she's not the same character. In fact, she's got the name Matlock, and she says, yeah, I know, it's just like the TV character, but I'm not him. You know. So they acknowledge the name. They acknowledge the connection with the old show, but it's not really a reboot in that way. It's not like her name, you know, it's not like her name is, you know, she's not related to Matlock. And it's not the same show. It's not the same total concept. But from a marketing standpoint, it's got the same name. So that looks good. There's that, as I said before, there's that instant name recognition to get people like me to watch this. It worked on me. Hey, I was never a fan of Matlock, but I like Kathy Bates, and let me see what they're going to do with this Matlock, you know, spinoff or reboot, whatever they're calling it, quasi semi reboot, whatever they're calling it. Let me see what they do to it. They got me. So, watching the show, it's going along. It's following the exact premise that you would expect. You know, there's this case. She comes in. She immediately makes an impact. She's impressing people. She's finding things that nobody else found, you know, and she's gaining a little respect within the firm and blah, 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 blah. And you say, okay, you know, that's the show. Now, I'm not going to give this away because I really think that's the reason I'm talking about this. I have to say that they had me hook, line, and sinker. And I'm not going to give it away, but all I can tell you is that there will be an encore presentation of this first episode on October 10th, in a couple of days, in a week or so. And then the show will continue on a weekly basis every Thursday, starting on the 17th, when it's, as I said before, the CBS premiere day. I would urge you, whether you're young or old, to watch this Matlock or record it, whatever it is, but watch this episode, this premiere episode of Matlock. I think it's crazy for me to even be saying this to you because I never expected to be a fan of this show. I didn't watch the original and I didn't have high hopes for this, what seemed to me is just a watered down reboot. But I have to tell you, there is a fantastic twist in this show. And it's dark and it's edgy and you would not expect it. Not only would you not expect it on CBS, which is known for the octogenarian network and known for just putting on shows that are safe and comfortable and aimed at an older demographic, this show, in the last 5 minutes, it turned everything on its head. It was something that you would, that if you were in a movie theater, you would go, holy cow. If you saw this on FX or on Netflix, you'd say, well, that's why these are better than network shows, because this, look at that. I'm not going to tell you what is involved. All I can tell you is there's a great twist, and you have to watch the whole show to appreciate the twist, but this twist puts this show on a different course than you would expect from the Matlock franchise, from the Matlock legend. This is not your grandfather's Matlock. Even though, for the most part of this hour-long drama, it sure seems like it. But stick around. Don't give up. Wait till it's over. Wait till the last 5 or 10 minutes, because there's a payoff here. And I'm interested now to see where this goes. And I hope that they can continue with what they set up here. But I have to tell you, I don't know who the person who developed this show is. I mean, it's based on the Matlock character to some extent. That was Dean Hargrove, who has a long, he was the original Matlock producer. I think he even worked on many shows, including Columbo. So he certainly, has a very good track record. It's based on that, but it's not that at all. And you have to give credit to a woman who I don't even know who she is, named Jenny Snyder Ehrman. And I just give her a lot of credit for this, because she took something that was easily, and there was a great scam going on here. They knew what was going on, and they were able to keep it hidden and not give it away. And now the secret's out, but I'm not going to tell you because I want you to watch this. But I have to say that Matlock is the new Matlock with Kathy Bates. They got me. They fooled me, Jerry. Not they fooled me, Jerry. They fooled me, Jerry. That's a Seinfeld reference. But wow, I'm intrigued to see where this show goes. It could have been a very run-of-the-mill, safe, comfortable, predictable show with a well-known actress and a well-known premise and character name. And that's the way it was presented. That's the way it was first sold. And until you watch it, and even as it's going along, you think that's what it is. And then it isn't. And I have to say, I am all in right now. And that's what, and I guarantee you, you're going to start to see, if this show is a success, apparently that name recognition thing that I talked about, it worked, because even though it looked like it was going to be a very safe Matlock reboot, it had one of the highest premiere ratings. I don't know if it was in CBS or whatever, but like without a Super Bowl lead-in, 7 or 8 million people, which in today's world on network television is a lot. So it was a ratings hit, but more importantly, it was a viewer hit. It is worthy of your attention. It's not just some run-of-the-mill thing. Predictable show. So I for you to really appreciate it in the long run, you have to see this first episode. And you got to watch the whole thing to really appreciate what they're doing. Because the first, you know, most network dramas are about 48 minutes, well, the commercials, but the first 43 minutes are exactly what you expect. But it's those last 5 minutes you're going to go, whoa, where did this come from? And that's going to push the show forward. So I have to tell you, they fooled me. They got me. They sucked me in. It was a masterful job of marketing. It was a masterful job of downplaying. It was a masterful job of secrecy. I don't know how they kept this a secret in Hollywood. This premiere episode came way under the radar because nobody was expecting it. And I think now it's going to be one of the biggest hits of the new season. If they can continue and maintain what they've introduced in that first episode. So, October 10th is your next chance on CBS. And I think, I don't even know if you could maybe watch it on Paramount Plus or some of the other streaming services. I'm not sure. But it's going to be on every Thursday night on CBS for sure. First run, the new episode. Starting on October 17th, but they're going to rerun this first episode on October 10th, which is a Thursday. I would urge you to either record it or watch it, and you tell me if there isn't a great twist on this that makes you want to see the next episode and see where this show is going. So bravo to CBS. And bravo to the creators of Matlock, the new version. Bravo to the developer of this show, Jenny Snyder Ehrman. Wow. Well played. Well played. Kathy Bates does a great job. There's a good supporting cast. We'll see how that goes. But I have to say, the concept of this show, taking this premise and flipping it on its head, if this show is successful, and I think it will be, I think this will change the way reboots are done. Because everybody in the network world and the television world, they just copy what's successful. And so now when someone comes into a network executive's office with a reboot idea based on what they just did with Matlock, those pitches are going to have a twist. They can't just be, oh, we're going to bring back the star of this show and some of the castmates and we're going to put them in another city or they're going to blah, blah, blah. No. You're going to need a little more than that because this new Matlock reboot has changed the rules of what a reboot can be. And that's something worth paying attention to. So CBS, the network that's kind of looked down on in terms of, oh, it's just got shows with well-known people aimed at an old demographic. It's not cool. It's not hip. In one episode, CBS became very cool and very hip. And they didn't do it with a cool, hip concept. They did it with a 40-year-old concept. Matlock, of all things. Bravo. Somewhere, Andy Griffith is smiling. His Matlock character is going to wind up being, I think, another TV sensation. In the words of Buddy Epson, doggies. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. And it should be theirs, too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 436. I'm Jim Tarano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. From the end of my mind to your ears. Doggies.